From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Tuesday, September 8th, when Governor Andrew Cuomo led a delegation to Puerto Rico. The delegation completed a day-long tour, then offered some promises and strategies to an island territory that is in serious financial trouble. How serious? Well, Puerto Rico faces roughly $72 billion in debt. It is one-tenth the size of California, with nearly half of California's debt. And because it's not a state, it stands at a disadvantage in some regards. More on that coming up. Now, perhaps you think that this is Puerto Rico's problem, not ours, not New York State's. But that day, the governor told the Puerto Rican people, quote, "Your problems really are New York's problems," end quote. He pointed out that Puerto Ricans are leaving the island in rather large numbers, and New York is among the most likely destinations. So what should we do? What can we do? Should Puerto Rico, by the way, become the 54th state? My guest for this hour will help us sort through these issues and more. I'm joined first and foremost by my colleague, Michelle Faust, WXXI reporter. Always lovely to share the microphone with you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. And in studio with us is Hilda Rosario Escher, who's the president and CEO of Ibero-American Action League. And Hilda, nice to have you.
Great to be here.
And Julio Sáenz is here. He's a journalist and author of a book called Rochester's Latino Community. Julio, nice to have you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
On the phone with us is New York State Assemblyman Marcos Crespo, the chairman of the Puerto Rican and Hispanic Task Force for New York State. And Assemblyman Crespo, nice to have you as well.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Assemblyman Crespo, when the governor says Puerto Rico's problems are New York's problems, I know you agree. In fact, you've written that as the island goes, so goes the mainland, so goes our entire country. Why do you say that?
Well, there's two important pieces. Number one, when we talk about Puerto Rico, we're talking about 3.5 million American citizens who reside on the island. And when you look at the Puerto Rican diaspora, we are 5 million strong across the United States, particularly with a stronghold in New York, Florida, Illinois, and a few other states, and those numbers continue to grow. That diaspora is very well connected. These are families residing still on the island. My mom still resides on the island. And New York has such a history and interconnected. We often joke that New York City is the capital of Puerto Rico because of the number of Puerto Ricans who live here. So there are a number of ways in which our economies correlate. When our problems are manifested there, they end up manifesting here. You got to think about all those affected by this crisis. They have to take a flight down to New York City or New York State or anywhere else in the U.S. and they're U.S. citizens. They'll qualify for services in those states.
And I want to follow up with one question for you, Assemblyman, and then my colleague Michelle Faust is going to help lead our discussion as well here, because there's a lot of different issues to discuss. But what Governor Cuomo and the delegation talked about a month ago when they were in Puerto Rico was the idea of some kind of state assistance, some kind of help, you know, whether it's a short-term or a small package, but also, for example, a single cash pledge, a proposal of a $5 million tourism campaign to encourage travel between New York State and Puerto Rico, which would need to be in the budget. There's that. Is that enough? What do you view New York State's state government role as an assemblyman and as someone with roots there? How do you view our role as a state government?
First, I got to tell you that I applaud Governor Cuomo for his leadership. I got to tell you that what he was able to put together, that delegation, the first trip was a full day, but it was quite a day. We managed to set the tone for some of the follow-ups that would take place. He talked a lot about how New York's Medicaid team and New York State Department of Health team would have a lot of expertise and experience in how we've bounced back and how we've made, you know, found savings and efficiencies within our system and how some of that expertise could be lent to those leaders in Puerto Rico who need that technical assistance and support. We talked about economic sharing of ideas, and part of that was a tourism campaign. When you think about, you got to understand that with this crisis, we are seeing the largest migration of people leaving the island, many of whom are coming to New York State, to communities in the city, to places like Rochester and others. And so there's an interconnectedness. That migration is no longer like the one in the 50s where we're poor and many uneducated or undereducated families. What we're seeing today are professionals, doctors, lawyers. We're seeing folks who are fully educated and ready to come and be very productive members of our society. And so that presents a whole new realm of opportunity for business development and other things that can not only be impactful and beneficial to New York State, but also, you know, that at some point we can help rekindle that economy in Puerto Rico that is so greatly needed.
So you're talking about, Assemblyman, you're talking about the people who are coming here and New York State effectively leveraging their many skills and assets, and whether it's business, tourism, more. But so much of what I've read about why Puerto Rico has $72 billion in debt, and I am as ignorant as probably anybody on this subject, but when you look at, well, they're not a state, they have different rules with, for example, Medicaid reimbursement, things like that. And so do you view those issues as more of a federal government issue as opposed to what New York State can do?
No question about it. No one is presuming that New York State can solve this crisis, but we can certainly be a player in helping Puerto Rico manage them, a lot of their issues through this crisis. And the big program, as I mentioned, is the advocacy. So we have,
Let me just jump in, only because I know he's sort of been all over the place this morning and trying to find a good secure connection on the phone. Just because we lost a good secure connection there, let's see if we can reestablish, and we'll bring him right back into the conversation. But I'll kick it over to my colleague, Michelle Faust. Again, you are much more in tune with these issues, and I'm trying to study and catch up. But I see the fact that this is not a state, and therefore their rules are different when it comes to healthcare reimbursement and the way those things are structured. And that's where my brain starts. I say, well, why is it that way, and isn't that impacting them?
Well, we'll be talking about that throughout the hour, and as soon as we get the assemblyman back on the phone, we'll talk about the details of the Medicaid, Medicare reimbursement issues in Puerto Rico, which is really leading a lot of the debt issue. But let's talk a little bit more about migration just to get started, because when I first came to WXXI about 2 years ago, one of the first stories that I did, I remember in a winter day, was looking at the Pew Hispanic Research Center. They had done a study on the large migration out of Puerto Rico to the U.S. mainland. A lot of people to New York State, although New York State historically has been one of the places that has accepted the most amount of Puerto Ricans, that has been less so over the last few years. And just this last year, just a few weeks ago, Pew did another study, and they said that last year, 84,000 people left Puerto Rico for the U.S. mainland. That's a 38% increase from 2010. So this is not only a great migration from the island, but something that is increasing. And one of the reasons why we have here Julio Sainz is that he's done a little bit of research, especially into the Rochester area of the Latinos that first established themselves here in the Rochester area in New York State. Now, Puerto Rico has been part of the United States since 1898 and has been, the Puerto Ricans have been full citizens since the Commonwealth was established in the 50s. What is this history of migration from the island to New York?
Sure. So as we know, the migration to New York has been going on for a long, long time, to New York City. And primarily, originally, a lot of folks were coming because they were against Spain's rule in the island. But that was just a trickle of dissidents and other folks.
We're talking in the 1800s.
Yeah, in the 1800s. And Rochester, you know, with the book I wrote a few years ago about the Latino history of Rochester, there was people at Kodak and places in the 1880s, executives and all kinds of things that were Puerto Rican. You saw the huge explosion with the Great Migration that's often talked about. And what's interesting about these both situations is they're both economically driven. The Great Migration was primarily driven by the Great Depression, and now we have the Great Recession that's really impacted Puerto Rico tremendously and driven a lot of folks here. What Mr. Crespo mentioned was very interesting in that first Great Migration, which was 500,000 people per decade there for a number of years, was primarily agricultural, rural populations that were moving here. And the big difference now is that you're seeing the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers being recruited away, as well as actively looking and taking almost any job they can find here in the U.S. to move to the mainland.
That's not necessarily, maybe it is in many ways. It benefits us when we get such talented people coming from Puerto Rico, but doesn't it hurt Puerto Rico, Julio?
Exactly.
And Hilda, you're nodding as well here.
Exactly. Go ahead. Yeah, and just to mention briefly is that you're having a ton of money being spent by the island's government to educate these folks in the fantastic state universities there.
Assemblyman Crespo, I actually want to read why not just read the vice president's words here? Because we've had a number of questions online, people saying, well, wait a second, shouldn't Puerto Rico be the 51st state anyway? Why are they burdened with this debt, et cetera? And so here is a piece written by Philip Arroyo, who wrote a piece about a year ago. He was a White House intern, a newly minted White House intern, when he asked Joe Biden, the new vice president, the vice president a few years back, if he thought Puerto Rico was kind of America's dirty little secret. And that was Arroyo's words. And here is what Joe Biden, according to Philip Arroyo, said about that regarding statehood. He said, I must say that is a very good question. I've always found Puerto Rico's current political status as something very bizarre. My word of advice to you and all Puerto Ricans is that you continue to fight hard until you reach your goal of equality, and we shall act. That's what Vice President said. Not all that definitive. President Obama has said if the Puerto Rican people express a desire for statehood, that it could be honored. Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio in this presidential campaign have said if the Puerto Rican people express a desire for statehood, that the federal government should honor that. Marcus Crespo, I don't know what the very, very latest numbers say. I always see it's pretty close to an even split. What do you know about the question of statehood there?
There's a lot of efforts going on in Washington. My colleague, actually my congressman, Jose Serrano, has been, as well as Nidia Velasquez and others, Luis Gutierrez, have always been at the forefront of that push for a status, a plebiscite to take place so that decision can be made. I will tell you my personal opinion. I do believe that a lot of these issues can get resolved with the status issue. I'm of the mindset that Puerto Rico should be the 51st state of the United States of America. I think we deserve that. We've earned that. And I think it'll put us in a position to have a brighter future. I certainly do not advocate for the status quo. Either we become a state or we get independence. And I think a lot of that is manifesting itself. But I want to be clear. The crisis that we're going through now and the actions that need to be taken are not dependent on the status question alone. And it's one of the reasons that in our Somos conference coming up, we're going to highlight the healthcare issue in Puerto Rico first and foremost, even more than the debt. You mentioned it earlier. Puerto Rico is in its Commonwealth status, has to abide by all federal regulations. We pay in Puerto Rico the same federal taxes for health care than any other state in the union, except we get reimbursed at a 70% rate less than any other state or territory. So the fact is we have the highest utilization rate of people in the Medicare and Medicaid program, but we get reimbursed less. And on top of that, to add insult to injury, not only did the federal government approve an additional 11% cut in the midst of this crisis while at the same time giving every other state a 3% increase, but on top of that, we are the only territory or state to have a cap on reimbursement, meaning if you're a patient who requires additional treatment, ongoing treatment, Puerto Rico's capped in what it'll get reimbursed, and it's up to the government to make up the difference. A lot, if you look at, well, I would dare say, numbers of up to a third of the debt that has been created, you could attribute to monies that the government of Puerto Rico has had to borrow and invest to make up its mandated health care services, and because it wasn't getting reimbursed properly. And so these numbers have led over the years to a systemic breakdown of our healthcare system. This is a crisis. We a lot of New Yorkers and Americans know more about what's happening in Greece than they know about what's happening in Puerto Rico. Those are words the governor shared as well on this trip, and it rings true.
Assemblyman Crespo, can I just jump in and just for clarification, because you mentioned taxes and the relationship, the sort of the complex relationship of Puerto Rico and the federal government, as Puerto Rico is not a state. On Twitter, R. Martinez says, isn't the problem Puerto Rico is not paying federal taxes? The USA does help with federal money but doesn't get a return. Is that incorrect, Assemblyman Crespo?
That is incorrect. Okay. That is incorrect. Yeah. We do pay health care taxes. We don't have an income tax system as other states do. We don't pay federal taxes for income purposes. So it is different in that regard. But when it comes to health care taxes, those are paid by people on the island, as well as other mandated services. For example, when the Obamacare was passed and approved, we don't qualify for the exchange in the same way that other communities do. But we still have to pay the $200 million a year back to the federal government on the health care tax. So Puerto Rico's government pays $200 million a year, on top of all this crisis, has to make this federal payment for a program we don't qualify for.
So,
there are a number of taxes that are paid by both residents of the island as well as the government for federal mandated services and federal requirements, but we're not eligible for the reimbursements and we're not eligible for the programs.
Assemblyman,
this is systemic.
Assemblyman Crespo, from your perspective of everything that you've been talking to us about, what portion of the $72 billion debt is related to Medicaid, Medicare, and other health care costs?
It's a significant portion. Based on some of the data that I've received from several sources, I would dare say that over the years, up to a third of this, maybe just a little less than that, or a quarter of this money is easily attributed to the healthcare crisis. You got to understand, one out of every $5 of economic activity on the island of Puerto Rico is in the healthcare sector. So this is a significant portion of their GDP, it's a significant portion of their economy, and it's the most underfunded and underserved. And it's problematic because we are subjected to every federal regulation, every federal mandate, and we pay all of the same healthcare taxes. We pay into the different programs that are created, but we don't qualify for many of them, and we don't get reimbursed at a proper clip as compared to any other community or state.
Let me ask Hilda and Julio in studio a question from one of our listeners. Tim in Pittsford has a question about who is migrating here from Puerto Rico. So let me read his comment and question, and we'll get their response here. Tim writes, just wondering why so many people from Puerto Rico come to Western New York. Of all places to choose, they're choosing Rochester. I know that they're saying there are doctors and highly skilled people coming here, but I'm guessing most are not. Is it because New York offers the most in the way of services, a.k.a. money in the form of some sort of welfare to them? I do know for a fact that there are plenty of people who come to this country and are escorted right to whichever social service office will give them money right away. I'm happy to have these wonderful, productive people coming here, but I have to be a little selfish and say I hope they are coming here and help us New Yorkers out with some of the highest taxes in the country by working hard. That's Tim. Hilda?
And I can tell you that the people that come to us, they come to us looking for classes in English so they can work, because that's the ultimate goal, is to be a member of the society and contribute. They don't come here specifically to collect welfare, but looking for a better opportunities that the island is not offering at this point.
Right, and I would say that obviously there's people from across the economic spectrum coming to the area, but it is different in that you have a lot of professionals. Just Sunday, I was watching the Bills game with a group of friends, and two of them were recruited from Puerto Rico to come work at Xerox. Another one was recruited from Puerto Rico to work at Harris. And the other one was recruited for Kodak and now is a professor at RIT. And they actually have been sent by their jobs to Puerto Rico to recruit professionals coming here. So it is across the spectrum.
And you have a lot of companies going to Puerto Rico, to the College of Engineering, looking for engineers. I was having a conversation with someone from Iberdrola, and they are really desperate looking for electrical engineers. And they are going to go to Puerto Rico to recruit.
Hilda, you had some sort of visceral reactions when we were talking about the concept of statehood, but I couldn't tell which way you were leaning. Did you want to weigh in on that question?
Well, I think that, yeah, the Puerto Rico needs to decide in the island what do they want to be. It is not up to us, to the Puerto Ricans that live outside of the island, but the Puerto Ricans in the island to decide. But we cannot stay in limbo, because that's the way that I see political status now is just basically not having any benefits, but yet giving a lot to this country.
Julio, what do you think?
Well, I actually was reading a quote from the Puerto Rican representative in the U.S. Congress, you know, the non-voting representative, and he was advocating for statehood. He was saying, when in history has a group of people that are marginalized ever been prosperous? And that's what he was addressing, that until the issue of statehood is addressed, they're going to be at an economic disadvantage.
Okay, and before I go to a break, Assemblyman Crespo, what is the short argument against statehood? When we visit Puerto Rico and we hear these debates, and again, the public has been largely split on this in Puerto Rico, what's the argument against it?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a, you have to look at the history of the American involvement on the island, both, you know, how it started and the things that have happened. If you look at the history of Pedro Albizu Campos, if you look at, you know, Puerto Ricans never asked for someone to come in and claim us. And so there's a history there, many who will point to that history and say, you know, largely on pride and on other issues, that Puerto Rico has never been given the opportunity to be its own independent nation, and it should have that opportunity. And there are those that feel that American involvement on the island has not led to prosperity. It has led us to a disarray and to a loss of industry and to a loss of population and to abuses that have taken place. And there's a history there that is real. There's a history there that is troubling. And there are arguments to be made for why some feel like we should not, and we should, you know, look the other way. But some of us look at it more pragmatically. Some of us look at it the positive side of that relationship, where those examples exist, and believe that the best future for Puerto Rico is to be a full state and to have all of the benefits that come with statehood, including political representation.
Let's get a short break and come back with our panel as we continue our discussion this hour of Puerto Rico's problems, the debt they're facing, $72 billion in debt, the migration issues that impact us in New York State, and really all of us. Our guests include the gentleman you just heard on the phone, Assemblyman Marcos Crespo, along with Hilda Rosario Escher, President and CEO of Ibero American Action League, Julio Saenz, a journalist and author, among many other things, entrepreneur. Your titles are too long, Julio. And my colleague Michelle Faust, WXXI reporter as well. Short break, and the conversation continues next. Coming up in our second hour, 55% of kids in Rochester are now growing up in poverty, more than double the national average. And Rochester students are struggling, not just to graduate. Only 4% of Rochester 8th graders pass the English exam. 9% of Rochester 4th graders pass the math exam. We could go on. We're going to look at a 2015 report card from Rock the Future and find out what we can do to help our kids.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you. And Lanoken Farms in Medina. U-pick season has begun and extends through November 1st. More than 350 varieties available, including Honeycrisp and Sweet Tango. Picking schedule and apple varieties online at lanokenfarms.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our discussion this hour, a little compressed by Vice President Joe Biden's announcement that we took live for you, that he will not be a presidential candidate. So we've got a lot to fit in here in the final 15 minutes. Michelle Faust, what stands out to you? Where do we want to go next here?
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblyman Marcos Crespo, who's said a lot about how the federal government requires Puerto Rico to comply with all the same regulations as far as Medicaid, Medicare, other issues regarding the Affordable Care Act, but is not getting the same levels of reimbursement. And I just want you to kind of, if you could, Assemblyman, give us an idea of what does that look like in a clinic in the island?
So last week I was in Puerto Rico as a follow-up to the first trip with some of the healthcare, the commissioner, the State Department of Health, as well as the Medicaid director and a team from the Assembly and a few others. My colleague, Dick Gottfried, from the chair of the health committee, we went out and met and toured the system and met with some of the officials in Puerto Rico to share some ideas about what we've done in New York. And we visited several clinics, and we heard it everywhere we went. Lack of resources to invest in infrastructure are leading to decay of their infrastructure alone. I mean, you look at these spaces, they're putting their money in care, and they don't have the free resources to invest in uptake of facilities. They're losing their healthcare professionals, the brain drain you guys alluded to earlier, where doctors, there's a number floated around that about an average of doctor a day leaves the island. Why would an American citizen who's a professional, medical professional, stay working in conditions where they're not getting paid properly when they could easily move and to anywhere in the United States and serve and work and get paid, you know, three times as much under any other system? And so they're losing their professionals, they're losing their nurses. So it's having a tremendous impact on quality of care. They're doing everything they can to maintain services, to provide health care. But I can't tell you that they're going to, I think one of the numbers we were given is that over the next 18 months, as the federal government implements an additional cut and the money that was sent for the implementation of when the Obamacare Act was done, they gave Puerto Rico a limited amount of funds, whereas it's recurring in any other state. In Puerto Rico, it was a finite number that was used in advance of the date that it was supposed to extend to. So they're going to run out of that money by 2017. And when that money runs out, we're going to hit a complete collapse of the healthcare system.
You know, I've heard said, and now this is a speculation that some people have made, that some of these things, economic pressures on the island, are meant to encourage the island to make a decision one way or the other as to a different status with the United States. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't buy that argument. I think the status question has always been a difficult one, and there have been, you know, I'm not the most knowledgeable person on the area. What I do know is that there have been mistakes made along the way on other on previous efforts to clarify this issue further. But the status question should not, and I want to be very clear about this, the status question alone should not hold us back and the federal government back from responding to the issues affecting 3.5 million American citizens. We do, and we are proud of the work we do for immigrant communities across the world. There are New Yorkers and other Americans who actually question, why are we spending so many resources helping others around the world? Well, we're not talking about immigrants. We're not talking about undocumented. We're not talking about people who are foreign to us. We are talking about American citizens who have died in every single war on behalf of this nation. We are actually sent to the front lines, by birth are citizens of this nation, and we're treated like stepchildren, and we're treated dismally when you look at the investments. And by the way, the question about the debt issue, it requires, you know, this question about bankruptcy, and I know we didn't get into that a whole lot, but that requires legislative action in Congress, and we know that Congress has not been able to act on almost any issue. So that's going to be very difficult. The healthcare crisis that I'm talking about, it's not up to Congress. It's up to the President and Health and Human Services to reevaluate the reimbursement rate, to rethink those cuts that they've approved, further cuts to Puerto Rico, to make Puerto Rico whole in terms of its expenditures, and to make sure that they have the resources to provide care as they're mandated to provide by federal regulation. It's almost shameful. You got 3.5 million American citizens who don't have the right to vote for president. So because of that, it's up to the diaspora and the 5 million Puerto Ricans throughout the United States to speak up for them. And I'm proud of what our governor has done to say that New York State is advocating and supporting Puerto Rico through this effort. We'll lend expertise, and we'll also advocate that the federal government do right by them.
Now, you mentioned that there's 3.5 million American citizens that are not able to vote for president, but the many people in the diaspora in the United States are able to vote for president because they are U.S. citizens. So that takes us to the other issue that we really wanted to touch on, is what does it mean, this huge influx of people coming to the mainland able to vote in the next elections? They can vote as soon as they register.
Absolutely. And you know what? It wasn't a coincidence that we had our a meeting of the mind, so to speak, of a Puerto Rican elected officials. We created, while there, we agreed to the creation of a coalition of Puerto Rican elected officials, the first such caucus that involves Puerto Rican officials nationwide. Our goal is to involve many other partners, not just those of Puerto Rican descent, but those who support a better future for Puerto Rico. And the idea is to create that advocacy. It's no coincidence that we ended up in Florida. We talk about that migration, the numbers. You know, New York has such an interrelated historic connection. There's so many Puerto Ricans here who have family members coming over, and of course, we all tend to move to where we have some familiarity or some resources or connections. But Florida has seen an incredible influx, and it's such a key state for political purposes. You know, Florida is a swing state. It's an important state. Many of the Latino Americans, the Cuban Americans there, have traditionally supported Republican candidates. But there are now over 1 million Puerto Ricans, a strong community within Central Florida that is changing that political future and dynamic. So that's a state that the Democratic Party could win now in bigger numbers. And so that dynamic is an important one to make the argument that, you know, politically, everybody should be paying attention to this community and to our needs, and to make sure that we don't continue to see this crisis. We talk about that migration, but every time we mention that, we're talking about families who have to, you know, separate from one another, who have to go seek out a better future elsewhere, when that should not be the case for a territory that has 3.5 million Americans living in it.
Now, Julio, you have lived in the South and worked in the South, and you've seen a lot of this migration. Talk to us about, you know, how are you seeing that, and how do you feel that it will be affecting the next elections?
Well, it's going to have a huge impact. I think, as Mr. Crespo mentioned, I mean, 1 million Puerto Ricans just in Central Florida, plus there's thousands moving to South Florida and other parts of Florida and the whole South. A lot of the statistics show that though we have a lot of folks coming to New York and Rochester because of that historical connection, family connections, a lot of folks are moving to the new South, Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, and they're going to really help tip the electorate in those states to more of a bluish hue. So I think Florida's definitely seen that impact. And I was just working, my previous position was running the newspaper in Atlanta for the Hispanic newspaper. And we saw numbers that showed almost 100,000 Puerto Ricans were in Atlanta alone. And there was a lot of talk in political circles of at what point does Georgia become a blue state as well.
I have a pile of listener emails. Can't get through them all, but let me just read two that are kind of contrasting here. The first email from Marion says the following. I have to admit I'm troubled to hear that Puerto Rican doctors and engineers are coming to New York State. That is not something to celebrate if it is hurting Puerto Rico. But a second email from a different listener says the following. There are more Puerto Ricans in New York City than in San Juan, the capital of Puerto Rico. Half of all Puerto Ricans already live in the United States. More are arriving every week since the debt crisis there. Maybe their problem is thus already being solved. Assemblyman Crespo, how would you respond to those two comments?
Where to begin? I mean, look, I think there are a number of ways to look at this. Certainly, I'll agree that I would prefer, and I think even those professionals who are now leaving, it wasn't their intention. They want to stay with their families. They want to raise their families in Puerto Rico. Many of the doctors we met with, when we asked them the question, why haven't you left? And they've said, because this is my home. And this is where I want to be, and this is where my family is. Mm-hmm. And so you have to understand that this is a migration, for the most part, not every case, of course, but for the most part, of need. And we have to respond, and this country and their federal government needs to respond to that need of a territory they're responsible for. And so I agree. I don't think it's a good thing. We don't want to see more professionals leaving the island. We need that intellectual capital there to move that new economy that has to rekindle itself on the island. And I think many of them, as things begin to settle down, and if we can make those investments, will look to return. And be back home and be where they want to be. So I agree. It's not something we're celebrating, but we have to be realistic about what the impact is. We have to be open, have open arms to those that are coming who need to settle. And it's true. It's not just New York. Actually, the professor mentioned the New South, and that's absolutely true. It's a more spread out migration. But the important thing is that we also want, and I think many of them would like to stay home in Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico needs the investment from the federal government as it deserves. And in order to do that, then they'll be able to go back and reestablish themselves there.
And when we look at the numbers, according to the Pew Hispanic Research Center, as of 2013, there were more Puerto Ricans living in the United States mainland, 5.1 million. Than on the island itself of 3.5 million. And that number has always been a large diaspora, but the diaspora has come to a point where there are more than ever in the United States.
Right. And last quick question for the Assemblyman, because our hour has gotten short here. A few listeners, David and a few others, have asked about Puerto Rican leadership. And essentially, I want to ask on the behalf of the listeners who are wondering, Assemblyman Crespo, did the debt crisis, was it exacerbated by poor political leadership or poor political decision-making, or do you think it is a consequence solely of federal policy, at least for the most part?
I'll be very honest with this answer. I think it's a little bit of both. I will not sit here and tell you that there haven't been mistakes. If you look at our political climate, Puerto Rico, it's such an even base for both the statehood party as well as the status quo party. And every few elections, there's a switch from one to the other, and every party wants to undermine what the last one did.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie to you and tell you there hasn't been mistakes made and errors made in the political front. But I will tell you this, no matter who would have stayed in power, no matter what their best efforts would have been, if I give you an impossible situation where you have the most need and the least amount of resources to deal with that need, you're not going to be successful. Mm-hmm. There are a number of other things we haven't talked about, like the Jones Act and how that impacts commerce in Puerto Rico, which makes it impossible for products to be prosperous there. When you're forced into using one sort of ability to move products in and out of the island to do imports or exports, it's going to cost three times as much, and that's a problem. When you look at the cap, when you look at all these nuances that affect Puerto Rico uniquely. And if you look at the history of why that happened, it really lends itself to a reality that the federal government has turned its back on the island of Puerto Rico. We need to make them pay attention. We need to make them turn around. We need to make them make the investments so that Puerto Rico has a fighting chance to get it right.
Assemblyman Crespo, I hope we can stay in touch and talk to you on future programs here. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, Hilda, I got about 30 seconds here, and because our hour was squeezed, you got the shortest time on the microphone. What do you want to leave our listeners with as they think about these kind of conversations going forward? About 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I think that we need to continue working together to help the population of Puerto Rico, but not only that, but also look at all of the Puerto Ricans that are coming here. And I know that the non-for-profits have been squeezed also, and we don't have as many resources. So looking at increasing the resources that we have so we can deal with the influx of Latinos from Puerto Rico.
Hilda Rosario Escher, thank you so much for your time. And Julio Sáenz, always a great conversation with you, and I look forward to the next. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michelle Faust, my colleague at WXXI. As always, Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you.